and people who aren't in America, welcome to the show. Young Turks, everybody. Kind of start I was looking for. Ben Mankiewicz, Ambry Allen, Brett Ehrlich, hour one of the Young Turks. Cenk and Anna are off today or otherwise preoccupied.
Thank God.
Brett, of course, you know him from, well, you probably don't know Brett. Most people don't.
It's fine.
Yeah. No, Brett is part of the, so are, is this your full-time job now?
Are you, it's, like, it's, you technic- it's classified on my tax returns as a full-time job.
A full-time
now,
job.
Who knows how those tax returns are going to look.
Yeah, exactly. My tax return will eventually fit on this index card.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it'll be an enormous index card. It'll be a room-size index card. But yeah, this is my full-time job. Catch me on Pop Trigger.
Right, that's right.
When not on this show.
Ambry Allen, TV host, comedian, she's been here before. I mean, I've been here on four or five shows with you. You probably don't only come in when I'm here, so you've probably been on more. But thank you both for being here. So we'll begin with a story, the kind of story that I hate, which I think is also a good way to start off a show by telling you that the story that we're about to do is loathsome. It's because this is when people say they hate politics, right? Mostly. That's a cop out to not understand what politics is about. Because if you're interested in sort of exciting debate about things that affect the world, that has the that has aspects of a horse race sometimes, that has a competitive nature, which I think most people like, you would love politics, right? But here, we're about to get into just sort of nonsense that we know will ultimately resolve itself in some way with a meeting or not a meeting. But here is a story about a non-meeting. With both sides trying to spin it. And in this case, although I object to the way Trump spins it more, I don't know that we're going to throw our arms around Chuck Schumer and say this is the way to do it. What we're looking at here is a possibility that the government will shut down, I think by the end of next week. Is that correct? Everybody's understanding?
So.
It's coming up.
Yes.
So we need a meeting, an agreement we need to come up with at least a temporary funding mechanism to keep the government going on the theory that we're not going to get a big budget passed and a big funding mechanism. But something that will keep the government going, a shutdown of government, which almost invariably, I think every single time, has hurt Republicans politically. Maybe I'm forgetting one, but every time the government is shut down, basically because that's the party that likes shutting the government down. They like it when things don't work. That suits them well. But in this case, Trump tweeted this morning the following. This would be the Trump tweet. Meeting with Chuck and Nancy, which he put in quotes as if to suggest that their names are not Chuck and Nancy, but those are their names.
Normally, when you credit someone together, you have to use an ampersand.
Is that right?
That is for the SAG rules
and
the
WGA
rules.
Which he should know,
it's weird.
Right?
It's weird that Trump not following union rules. meeting with Chuck and Nancy, otherwise known as Chuck and Nancy, today about keeping government open and working. Problem is, they want illegal immigrants flooding into our country unchecked or weak on crime and want a substantially super loud raise taxes. Oh, sorry, raise taxes.
Right, you must emphasize raise more for it
more,
is an all
yeah,
right.
So it's really
but don't underemphasize.
Country crime, raise taxes.
Yes,
I don't see a deal. So again, I mean, you know, if this were the first tweet that he had sent in this manner, that would be shocking. I mean, it's wrong. It is insulting. It's degrading. It is wildly misleading. As if Pelosi and Schumer are advocating a new policy of allowing illegal immigrants to flood into the country. They don't want to raise taxes. I wish they did. I wish they were advocating a plan to raise taxes, to at least at a bare minimum restore taxes to the thriving 90s level of the Clinton administration. But no, what they want to do is prevent you from cutting taxes, which is the problem always when one party advocates cutting taxes, is that then if you're against it, you're against something that in general, without attaching it to anything, every American wants.
Yeah.
Everybody wants their taxes lower.
You were talking about people being able to wrap their mind around politics and saying, like, I hate politicians as a cop out for that. There are things when I look at this interaction between the two that I can wrap my mind around. I can wrap my mind around Trump wanting to go into a meeting with Chuck and Nancy after his previous meeting with Chuck and Nancy, which seemed like he was abandoning the Republicans.
Right.
And he's now in this weird position. He's managed to alienate his base at times by endorsing Luther Strange. And, you know, he's been able to alienate the establishment Republicans by going into a meeting with Chuck and Nancy. It seems like he probably was most recently in a room with someone from the Republican establishment and wanted to alienate these two. The other thing I can think of is he's trying to find any and all reason to paint this well if his tax proposal doesn't go through.
That's right. That's right. He wants to blame them.
Yeah, right. Agreed. I think this is kind of postured as a corrective to their previous meeting, which, you know, he received a lot of backlash from his base. And kind of also contributing to this narrative that they're obstructionists, right? So then we move away from this meeting, which is about the budget, right, to all of these other issues about raising taxes and being tough on crime, right? So it's a complete distraction that, you know, panders to the base and again paints the picture that Dems are being obstructionists.
The Dems being obstructionists is a great notion because, of course, that would remind the president that he has a majority in both houses. So the fact that he has passed zero pieces of legislation is on the obstructionist Republicans, who are actually obstructionists. In many cases, stuff didn't pass for the right reasons. But in general, that is a party caused by people who want to not pass legislation because they don't think government should do much. They want a small, limited government. So painting the Democrats as obstructionists is rich. What's also interesting about it, well, not interesting about it, what is typical about it is that it's Trump at his most Trumpy. Like what he thinks is, this is what I imagine this is the sort of thing pre-Twitter and pre-presidency that he would do when he, because he fancies himself a skilled negotiator, right? So you sort of belittle the other side so they come in defensive and have to give you what you want. Again, reason 1,186 of how he does not understand the job that he has. So anyway, the response, you know, I've now talked myself into approving of Chuck Schumer's response a little bit. It's still lame. It's still lame, but I get it. If somebody's going to send a tweet about that in the morning, not going to the meeting is the right thing to do. Here is Chuck Schumer's response to Donald Trump's tweet.
We had hoped to make progress with the administration on these issues in a meeting this afternoon. Unfortunately, this morning, instead of leading, the president tweeted a blatantly inaccurate statement and then concluded, "I don't see a deal." The president said, "I don't see a deal," 3 hours before our meeting, before he heard anything we had to say. Given that the president doesn't see a deal between Democrats and the White House, Leader Pelosi and I believe the best path forward is to continue negotiating with our Republican counterparts in Congress instead. Rather than going to the White House for a show meeting that won't result in an agreement from a president who doesn't see a deal, we've asked Leader McConnell and Speaker Ryan to meet with us this afternoon. If the president, who already earlier this year said, quote, our country needs a good shutdown, if the president isn't interested in addressing the difficult year agenda and wants to make the government shut down, we'll work with those Republicans who are interested in funding the government, as we did in April.
That was great. I don't know, man. I wanted to get out of my chair and just cheer.
you did want to get out of your chair and cheer a cadence.
Look, but it's more than just the cadence. You did want to get out of your chair and cheer a cadence. It's right there. You don't have to look down every word. Like, you've got it. And so the problem is that, you know, he says Trump's lying. And Trump, of course, is not. They are both lying because they're all just for show. So you want moments that at least seem like reality and that maybe even give you reality, which would be Schumer saying, and I don't understand why politics doesn't quite work this way. Why Schumer goes, did you see the Trump's tweet meeting with Chuck and Nancy today about keeping government open? Working problem is that they want illegal immigrants flooding our country unchecked, weak on crime, substantially raised taxes. Why would I meet with a clown who said that? Why would I listen to that and then go into a meeting with him? If the president wants a serious meeting, he knows where we are. We can have a meeting. But I'm not going in like that, and I wouldn't let Nancy Pelosi go. I would advise Nancy Pelosi not to go in either. It's this sort of it's this stock response about going for a show meeting. Well, it's a show meeting, and you're also giving a show statement about the show meeting. Mm-hmm. It's all for show. You disagree.
Yeah, well, I think that Trump has a way of setting up issues in a way that it's almost impossible to have the right response. Because I think that response would similarly look ridiculous.
Why would that look ridiculous? It's so honest. Like, why would I go to a meeting with a guy? We're prepared to go into this meeting, and he sends a tweet saying there's no deal done, and he mischaracterizes what we believe. F that guy.
Okay. that is what he says. He says he sent out this tweet. It's ridiculous. Therefore, it's a waste of time.
Some of this is style over substance. I think that little speech by Chuck Schumer sends a message of inauthenticity to America and makes it very easy for people to say the thing that bothers me most, that bothered me from the left in the previous election that we had, it was in November of last year, that, hey, man, they're just the same. Like, I hate that stuff. I hate it. I hate it with a passion, and I think that people who have an audience are duty-bound to inform and not encourage that manner of thinking, but it's hard to do when Chuck Schumer gives you that.
Chuck Schumer's also a grandfather, and I think he has handled a tantrum before. And right. I would like to see him channel that thing that's easy to wrap your head around, which is a grandfather handling a child who's having a tantrum, which is if Chuck Schumer just says, are you done? You wanted me to come in, and I thought we were going to have a conversation.
Sure, okay.
What was that?
Style.
Okay. Like that. Like, are you done?
Maybe that's better.
But like, but they're both genuine.
Yeah.
But it feels with Chuck Schumer, like, it, and all of these clowns, is that they have. It feels like you're designing a superhero, like your character in like a Dungeons and Dragons type game, where you have only so many points to assign skill wise. And you have, like, with Trump, his communication skill is like through the roof. His ability to like get his message through the din is through the roof, but his intelligence is way down here. Chuck Schumer, it's like he needs to dial up that communication lever to assign some of his points. I don't know where all his points are. Master behind the scenes tactician, but he definitely cannot communicate in an authentic way. That the way that everyone not only wants him to, but needs him to at this moment.
I guess what we have to remember is that these statements, at least, Trump's is for America. Trump's is for his base. Sure. And Trump's is an excellent point by both of you guys to remind everybody that this was an effort to get past the last beating he took from Republicans for making a deal with Chuck and Nancy. He initially was like, hey, this was great. They came in. We got something done.
Right.
So there's that. But their response is not really for us. Their response is for Washington.
Now, right.
Chuck is talking to other Democrats, and Chuck is talking to the media, and Chuck is setting up a manner of how this is going to play out and of not backing down to Trump. So I get that. It is just frustrating to me continually not get, it seems to me, the very thing that caused a candidate, not like Bernie Sanders, but Bernie Sanders, to break through. A degree of and Trump, a degree of plain-spoken authenticity, which I would take advantage of again and again and again in these situations, which these guys, first of all, stop saying the words Leader Pelosi. It does sound super communist to me.
Yeah,
every
really
time
does.
I hear it, I hate it.
It does, like Star Wars and communists at the same time.
Yeah,
Leader Pelosi met with Chancellor Valorum this morning.
Hilarious.
But they're not capable of it. They're not suddenly going to start being. It's not their thing.
I also want part of the authentic response should be to point out something else about Trump's tweet, which is, yes, obviously he's like going, I'm going to shake you up before our meeting today to put you on the back foot. But I want them to not only say, like, are you done? It's not only ridiculous that you're throwing a tantrum before we come meet you, but like everything you're saying is ludicrous. And as you referred to earlier, go through three things in a row. Like, what? No one wants to flood the streets with anything. Like, no one wants to do that.
No one likes a flood.
Yeah. No one likes a flood. No one wants to raise your taxes. We're trying to get you to stop doing the things you're doing with taxes, which is raising taxes, and then identify the people that are going to have to end up paying an effectively higher tax rate in the near and far term.
So the response, Nancy Pelosi said essentially the same thing that Chuck Schumer said. We'll leave that out, but Sarah Huckabee Sanders responded to this as she is so capable of. Here's what Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the president's spokesman, said. The president's invitation to the Democratic leaders still stands, and he encourages them to put aside their pettiness, stop the political grandstanding, show up and get to work. Stop the political grandstanding. You open the day with a tweet with a bunch of capital letters. You know, I mean, you were the ultimate political grandstander.
Yeah, and then the meeting that followed, right, with the empty seats, that, like, that's political pettiness. Like, the theatrics, all of that is ridiculous. And if anything, it shows his complete inability to take something that he presents as so serious, like, not seriously.
But right? Then, but you make a great point. In that, so they have the meeting and they have the empty seats in the meeting. And this is where you got to be careful. Like, I'm not 100% sure that the Democrats are going to win that battle with those empty seats. So far, every shutdown, they've won. They are standing on a much more significant principle here, a tax plan that has been pretty accurately portrayed as being massively top-heavy, and not just top-heavy in that it will reduce the inflow of cash into the government while giving a tax break to the richest Americans, but it will actually put a tax burden on the poorest Americans and middle-class Americans. Those things aren't set in stone yet as far as the message that people are getting. And so we are in a world of theatrics, which is why I began this with saying this is ultimately they're either going to make a deal or not. The story is going to be, did they make a deal or not? And what does that mean? Here we're in the part about who's going to look best if no deal is made.
This and this is the only thing politicians have to do anymore. The only thing you have to do is fund the government.
Oh, right, fund the government.
That's it. Like, can we identify one more thing that you absolutely have to do? Because everything else can be a punt down the road. Now we're getting into, with the tax bill, this weird feeling that we need to do something, don't we? But they don't really have to pass this tax bill. Mm-hmm. There's people who are holding out. But the only thing you have to do is pass the continuing resolution to fund the government. And it always gets this dramatic, this close to it. And it's super frustrating. And even if you feel like you're winning certain points along the way in this discussion, we're like, some people think this is exactly the tax bill discussion. And it's really difficult to later on down online figure out what the hell this meeting was.
You know, to take this into why the details of the tax bill, that's what matters, not this stuff, right? The detail, it doesn't matter that Donald Trump's a racist, or at a bare minimum, a race baiter, right? Any reasonable person has to, at a minimum, accept that he panders to racists. And so when he calls Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas in front of literally the people who
her dad, he thinks that's her dad.
Right.
He thinks that's Pocahontas' father.
In front of people whose sacrifice we should all be amazed by and ashamed that we asked them to make that sacrifice, right? Of the members of the Navajo Nation, who had every right to say, we're not going to fight in your war. Mm-hmm. You have any idea what you've done to us, right? We're not, in many states, allowed to vote. But I'm falling into it, too. That's exciting to talk about. What matters is that Elizabeth Warren, and her intellectual brainchild, the Consumer Protection Board, right? Consumer Financial Protection Board, that matters. That might be the strongest piece of legislation, strongest act that we have come up with that followed the financial crisis. That might mean more to regular Americans than Dodd-Frank, right? Which was, depending on who you ask, on the left, significantly watered down, or crazy people on the right, too tough. Right? Nobody reasonable thinks it was too tough. But the Consumer Financial Protection Board, that matters. And instead of having a legitimate big debate about that board, about the Consumer Financial Protection Board, we get into a debate that Donald Trump is comfortable having. Am I racist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's comfortable with that. So, and we lose out talking about the meaty stuff, as always. All right. We have completed our first story. I'm going to give us a B+.
Speak for yourself.
We'll be back. Well, I'm giving myself a C. You guys raised the grade.
Aww.
We'll be right back.
So sweet.
All right, so turning to the GOP tax bill, which they're looking for a vote Thursday or Friday, end of this week on the GOP tax bill. One of the senators who may be against it, it's hard to tell, it's hard to pin him down, is Republican Senator Bob Corker. Bob Corker, of course, now a outspoken critic of the Trump administration. He is not running for re-election in Tennessee. And he is the architect, not the sole architect, of a new bill, of a new bill that would, what is the word they're using?
It's a backstop. They're trying to do the backstop thing.
Would be a backstop if the current tax bill does not meet the exaggerated magical growth that they say it will. So it's funny, but again, it's more theatrics. It's an acknowledgement to me from Bob Corker, although he won't just say it. Hey man, you know it's not going to, right? Because you've made it clear to us that while you're wrong on every issue, you're not a moron, right? And so he knows, and so now he has come up with this plan. He says with this backstop, that way you're in a situation where you're not creating deficits should the projections laid out not turn out to be real. Now we'll take that first graphic, graphic four here, for more of Bob Corker. The change, this is from Alice Olstein from Talking Points Memo. The change that they're seeking would create a backstop or trigger mechanism to undo some of the deepest tax cuts in the bill after several years if that magic economic growth doesn't materialize. But again, a reminder there that it's several years down the road that they would still let this play out before this would kick in.
And they haven't said what day, what year, much. Is it 0.4% growth, you know, every year after year, year over year compounded? Or is it like, well, in 10 years, if, you know, we reach the expiration date of some of these tax cuts and it doesn't work, well, then we'll let the tax cuts expire.
Well, right. then
or they'll even raise taxes, right? Which.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot you can put in there depending on how you think the government's going to go. If you're going to put in there and be like, all right, it's going to take us at least 12 years to rebuild the Republican Party. We are 5-6 years. Well, we're going to put it on the Democrats if they do end up winning the House. Mm-hmm. We'll put triggers in there so that suddenly it's on them and they're going to have to raise taxes to give us a reason and something to rally around in any midterm election that could happen along the way.
Yeah. So then they should, again, and so then when that time comes, just raise taxes. Say it. Mean it. Explain why. Here's what Corker says. This is graphic five. We've been working throughout the entire Thanksgiving break. I'm certain that's not true. Working closely with the administration and some members of the Finance Committee to design a trigger or a backstop in the event the revenues are not there. There's a way to recoup them, as we were saying. So then we go back to Talking Points Memo and Alice Olstein, who says, Corker wouldn't say, as Brett was getting at, Corker wouldn't say exactly what tax cuts the trigger would undo or when it would kick in. Both of those seem like significant parts of, I don't know, a piece of congressional legislation that maybe you'd want to get to, though he did suggest there could be multiple triggers in the 10 years after the bill becomes law. So a decade from now, when the magical growth hasn't occurred in any of the 10 years, there might be something there. Let's get the final little bit here from Alice Olstein. Reports by independent groups, including the Tax Policy Center, have found that even with the predicted economic growth, the tax bill would still balloon the deficit by more than $1.2 trillion, enough to trigger deep automatic cuts to Medicare and other federal programs if Congress doesn't vote to waive its own budget rules. Again, a reminder of, to the Republicans, this is a win-win. Either they get the magical growth and they're heroes, they cut taxes. It's never done that. It won't do it here, right? Or that happens. And then that it triggers automatic cuts to Medicare and other federal programs that they're very comfortable cutting and always want to cut, but don't, are most of them uncomfortable, except for a few members of the Tea Party, coming out and saying, no, no, we'd like to cut this. We don't want this. We either want to privatize, we don't want any part of it. We don't think this is the government's, this is the federal government's job. This is always what they want. This is why this whole debate is so dishonest.
Yeah, and they also get to paint the Democrats as people who are really hoping the economy doesn't grow. You know, you guys are really hoping so we can repeal these taxes, so we can raise taxes on people, and you guys are just chomping at the bit that the economy doesn't grow. Another way to characterize these backstops also is it's a timer. It's a timer on trickle-down economics, and I hate to break it to these guys, but that timer's been running since the 80s. And when is enough enough? Like that I feel like a broken record on, but that's what they're getting at.
Yeah, they... again, I'm struck by the dishonesty and because the Republicans have figured out how to play the media in the difficulty that the mainstream press always has in calling lies, and calling deceit, or calling what we know. This is what they want. They're not interested if those government programs fail. They want deep cuts in Medicare. For a while, they made it clear, but that backfired. So, Brett, I agree that they'd like to paint the Democrats as anti-growth, but mostly what they want to paint the Democrats as not interested in the things that not you, but the voters that they're talking to are interested in. That these are a lot of people who want to live off the government teat. These are minorities, these are poor people, these are people who are draining us, who are dragging us down slowly. And that ultimately, you know, you're either going to stand with them, that's who the Democrats want, they just want to arm, you know, well, actually the Republicans would like the arming, but they want to let illegals flood into the country, and then that's why I think that's in this tweet too, they want to let illegals flood into this country and drain our system. And that's who Democratic voters are, and that's who their constituents are.
I think the growth number is too general a number, because the Republicans, when they pitch this new economic plan, they're saying that certain things will happen to trigger growth. Why don't we make the triggers, you know, the backstop, dependent on those things they say will happen? Like they say the corporate tax rate is too high in America, let's lower the corporate tax rate, which will bring in all this money that's being offshored. Why don't we put a repatriation mandate trigger? Why don't we mandate that these companies come back? And if that's their logic, if that doesn't happen over a certain time, why is that not the trigger? As opposed to this idea of GDP growth or whatever they're looking at, which can be dependent on so many different factors. One of the main arguments against this is that you're trying to lower the corporate tax rate, and that will cause since companies have so much more money that they'll pour it back into the economy. But if you look at those giant corporations, small businesses, I've seen a small business is more likely to take a penny saved and move it into invest it back in the company.
Every dollar the Young Turks have made, they put it back in.
Put it right back in. Right. Yeah, which is why I am terrified for its financial solvency every single day.
So there's a couple of other things. Senator John Kennedy, there should be a rule. You can't have a senator named John Kennedy.
Yeah, that's true. Senator John Kennedy.
It's like number 40, Jackie Robinson's number 42. It's been retired across Major League Baseball. John Kennedy. Been retired in the Senate. You have a middle name, probably.
He's got to.
Let's say his middle name is
Bobby.
Kyle.
Bobby.
Just can't. Go ahead.
So he says it will pay for itself. I would not vote for this bill if I thought it was going to increase the deficit. I mean, so again, that gets to, right? What do we think that is, Amber? Is that deceit? Or ignorance?
We don't believe you. And I think that's what a lot of these Republican senators have said, like, well, if I didn't believe in this, I wouldn't do it. Give us a CBO score.
Yeah,
let's
right,
go through some hearings. Let's let the professionals tell us what this bill is about. And you're rushing it. And we don't care that you're working through Thanksgiving. You wouldn't have to if you weren't trying to rush this bill, this crappy bill, to get it to pass. So I don't care about your personal feelings. I'd like some evidence to prove that this bill really is as bad as we know it is.
Another thing along to that point, both James Lankford, a Republican of Oklahoma, and Jerry Moran, Republican of Kansas, they've both brought up the fiscal disaster in Kansas, led by Governor Sam Brown back there, that resulted from a slew of massive tax cuts. And then, and it's weird that what happened in Kansas was they cut taxes by all this money, and then the government of Kansas, it didn't have any money, right? No one could have seen that.
In a similar move, I stopped putting gas in my car.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden I was trying to get somewhere, it wouldn't go. It would not go. So they both say that the result from a slew of massive tax cuts is a cautionary tale that should not be repeated on the federal level. Well, then, dudes, repeat it.
Yeah.
Then don't repeat it.
That's exactly what this is. Right. It will pay for itself. You're not bad. And those aren't backed up by any numbers.
And the same people who were concerned about the threat of the debt crisis all of a sudden don't care about it. So
that Consumer Financial Protection Bureau thing drives me crazy.
Well, we're going to touch now on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, but in the context of the story that triggered the latest conversation about it. So Donald Trump yesterday appeared before, was at an event to honor Navajo war veterans. These are the code talkers who invented an entirely, who were fluent in Navajo and fluent in English, and then invented an entirely new language to be able to send codes to say things. There was an obit, a Charles Pierce Gray piece in Esquire, quoting from an obit from a couple years ago of a Navajo code talker who died at 93 in 2015. And the codes, like, so just so you're clear about what these codes were, his code was Japanese enemy machine gun to your right. Take it out, destroy. Right? And so you know what they did? They heard that. The Japanese couldn't break that code. And then they took it out and destroyed it and won a battle. Like, that's what these guys did. That's what they did. This guy, the New York Times obit that Charles Pierce was quoting from, was not allowed to vote. When he went to get his identity card that Native Americans in New Mexico were required to carry with them, they had to have identification with them and show identification, told him that he was not a full American citizen. Again, couldn't vote for years. And even though, as he thought to sign up for the Marines, when a recruiter came, he thought, "What? Why am I, you know, why would I do this after the way the government has treated my people?" And they thought, "No, you know what? This might be the last meaningful chance I have to serve my country." So he did. So Donald Trump takes that opportunity to make his Pocahontas joke at an event to honor the Navajo war veterans at the White House. The reaction was pretty much universal. They were dumbfounded that Trump would use this event to take a political jab at Elizabeth Warren. The reason that he's taking these political jabs at Elizabeth Warren is because I think very clearly the White House sees Elizabeth Warren as a threat. And they want to undo her significant contribution to rebounding from the financial crisis, the Consumer Financial Protection Board. That's hers. It's worked. Many people consider it the strongest federal action taken after the financial crisis, as I mentioned before, stronger than Dodd-Frank. And they want to kill her significant piece of legislation. The battle very quickly that has been set up there is the director resigned, and he named a career employee there to take over, and Donald Trump, because there was a vacancy at a federal agency or a federal staffing position, named Mick Mulvaney, his budget director. The guy, first of all, the guy has a job, right? So his job would be do nothing, protect nothing. That's what they'll do. So that's in court right now of which guy's going to lead that. So, but anyway, the reaction to that was, I believe, Trump's motivation for making the Pocahontas joke at Elizabeth Warren's. By the way, the joke that has no resonance whatsoever. So here was the reaction around town to that. First of all, from Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Let's take graphic 8 here. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders, asked about criticism of Trump's remarks, said a racial slur was certainly not the president's intent. She said, going on here, I think what most people find offensive is Senator Warren lying about her heritage to advance her career. That's not what's happened. That's what that story has been debunked 1,000 times. Meghan McCain, for example, who should really not be carrying the administration's water on anything, she went on The View this morning and said that Senator Warren used her Native American heritage, which she'd been told about all her life, that she used it to get into Harvard Law School. She taught at Harvard Law School. Do you know where Senator Warren went to law school?
Where did she go to law school?
She went to Rutgers, the Newark campus.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, and I'm not trying to make fun of the Rutgers. Well, I am a little. The Rutgers Newark campus. No,
yeah,
but I'm saying.
She's not trying to make fun of Newark, New Jersey, but it sucks there.
Right, but she was going to get in there. And she didn't, by the way, use it there. It was merely listed in her Harvard professorial
bio.
Bio. Right. That's it. She's already at Harvard, right? Success. Can't right. really succeed anymore. That's it. But of course, Meghan McCain got the information wrong, and Senator and Sarah Huckabee Sanders suggesting that that what most people find offensive is Warren lying about her heritage. No, what most people find offensive is the president calling Senator Warren Pocahontas, period, and then augmented by the fact that he did it in front of these Navajo Nation war veterans. So to continue the story a little bit, ABC got involved. In the person of Jonathan Carl, ABC News White House correspondent, he said, why did he, meaning the president, feel the need to say something that is offensive to many people while honoring the Navajo code talkers, these genuine American heroes. A couple of things. Leave, put that back up for 1 second. I mean, I got it. I know these guys are out there, and we've seen some great journalism, but it should be offensive to everyone. And it doesn't matter whether it's offensive. What matters is that it's hideous and it's inappropriate and it's unpresidential and it's cruel and it's petty. And of course, by referring to Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas, of course that's going to be offensive to these guys. Not that even the way Jonathan Curl, and I don't mean to single him out, I really don't, but even that has a way of making it seem like, boy, those Navajo code talkers, those guys sure are touchy. Like, get over it, fellas.
Right. I feel with stories like that, when people say and write those, it's you are caught in a very difficult position between the president tearing down every line of formality that's ever been set forth, and then your respect for the kind of way that a journalist who is an ABC News correspondent writes. And it's just, this is how I write it.
I agree. I don't mean to call Jonathan Curl. They're in an impossible situation, but it has the effect of, to me, I read that and I'm like, oh, these, you know, like, toughen up, Navajo code talkers, when literally the history has proven they're the toughest.
It's just such a transparent way. It's like, there's an Indian, she said an Indian thing, I'm going to do the Indian thing.
And then do this, reach out, put my hand on, like, but I love you, guy.
Yeah. Am I right? Prop?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a window into his mind, and again, his inability to understand the gravity or seriousness of any moment ever. And I think to your point about the statement, it's just stupid, right? So we don't even have to go down the line of the racial slur argument to talk about the inappropriateness of even mentioning it, of even using the moment to insult another senator, right? I think it's just ridiculous, because then we get into the issue with Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, well, it's not a racial slur, right? We had that argument. We have the argument about what other people find offensive, and now it's a debate about what people find offensive.
Right, that's right. That's really what I use. Everybody says things better than I do. Thank you. So now we get a response to Jonathan Carl's tweet from Eric Trump, who is the other son. The irony, says Eric Trump in a tweet of an ABC reporter, parentheses, whose parent company Disney has profited nearly $500 million on the movie Pocahontas. Nailed it. Inferring that the name is quote unquote offensive is truly staggering to me. I saw a tweet today, I can't remember who it was from, and I'm sorry not to give them credit, that it's becoming really hard to tell who the dumbest Trump son is. That the competition between Eric and Donald Jr. is really, really intense. And I think it's going to go down to the wire.
I think Pocahontas is a bad movie. I tried to rewatch Pocahontas, and like Disney should kind of be ashamed. It was a very like Dances with Wolves era. Native Americans are magic people, and Grandmother Willow can like magically touch you, and now you like speak the same language. It is a paint with all the colors of the wind. It's very touchy feely, weird mid 90s feel goodery. But
just keep bear in mind. I neither agree nor disagree. But it's a reasonable point. But it is from an industry that, you know, for the first 40 years that it was in serious business, in a big profitable money-making business, portrayed just 97% of every Native American as a dangerous warrior looking to slit your throat. So, maybe there's a little too much simplification and overcompensation.
I feel like they've come a long way.
Yes.
That's the thing, is that they are not caught in the same place. There is a video circulating right now of Donald Trump asking why that certain people are given licenses by the government to have Native American gaming casinos. And his quote is, they don't look like Indians to me.
Right, yeah, it's great.
They don't look like Indians to me.
There's video.
And that video of that. And then there's video of this where he's like, you have a feather, they have a feather, we're Native Indians. He hasn't gone anywhere.
That's right. He's stuck in 1940 movies.
And this tweet doesn't make any sense. Like, it's non sequitur. Like, why are we talking about the movie Pocahontas? Because Pocahontas is a real person. Like, why are we talking about the movie Pocahontas? And Pocahontas can be a shitty movie, and this can be a shitty statement. Like, both things can be true. Yeah. It's still inappropriate.
Yeah, you know who was called Pocahontas in the movie Pocahontas? Pocahontas.
Yeah. You know what I'll get him with, though? The parent company joke.
Yeah.
The corporate structure joke will really get him.
And coming from you, it's like,
I tweeted back at him like, it's all about usage. Like, you can use the word Pocahontas as like the name of a person and as a slur, and like the usage and content is what matters. Like, I could say love Trump's hate and that's not a slur, but I could say you're acting like a real Trump and that is a slur.
Very nice, that's right. I feel like that, which one's his wife?
His wife is, I think, Barbie? Barbie or
all right.
Which one?
Sorry, I asked.
Kid's sister. Skipper, which one? Is it Barbie or Skipper?
Skipper!
I don't remember.
But
that was mean, and I feel bad about it instantly. That was wrong.
Was there a black version of Skipper?
Yeah, there was.
Okay,
I think it was Skipper.
I had to make sure.
I feel like Eric Trump thinks he learned the definition of irony and wanted to use it in a tweet.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And then it's going to be like that Anchorman moment that where Will Ferrell doesn't quite get, you know, where
the
when in Rome. You know, they're in bed together. He goes, well, when in Rome? And she's like, who's the, why am I blanking it?
Christina Applegate
says, no, you still don't. You don't quite have it.
Yeah. I also want to say that he came up with this idea to use the ironic while just blasting Alanis Morissette in the shower, like in his green marble shower, like, it's like rain. It isn't ironic. You know what else is ironic?
Yeah.
I'm going to get him. Brings his phone into the shower. It short circuits. Opens a drawer full of like 100 other phones.
100 other new phones.
This happens every day. I got to stop. All right.
I hate that these gaffes always happen in front of people of color too, right? So even if he's not racist, right? The fact that he continues to do these things and can't comport himself in a way that is just regular shows that he's uncomfortable around people, right? Like if you're uncomfortable around people of color, you can't do regular kinds of interactions, that kind of shows you might be racist, right? Like you might have racial biases that prevent you from being normal, right? And that's problematic.
He might also have, I have Indian friends, you know, like this is my Indian friend here. I'm with them. We're giving them an award. So I'm obviously not,
even the word special, you're special to me. It's like, this is an,
right.
Like,
just talk normal.
Like, use a vocabulary word that's better than like special. I'm a warrior. Like, I'm a hero. Like, use another word.
These Native American warriors made the ultimate sacrifice. They could have stayed home with bone spurs if they wanted. Like, so many. Who did that?
All right, we'll be back here on the Young Turks. North Korea has apparently fired a ballistic missile, indicating that maybe Trump didn't have that magic Kvorka touch to get them to stop. Go figure, Young Turks.
Yes.
Unfortunate music to come back with bad breaking news, or really breaking bad news.
Nice. I rewatched that show recently. It's still good.
Still good, yeah. Do you watch Better Call Saul?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I think, do we not do the reviews together? I don't remember.
I don't remember which ones you were on.
Yeah.
I work with a lot of people, Brett.
Oh, I know.
That's the whole tone of that was.
I sit at home painting images of you for my memory.
I mean, a lot of white guys come through my life. hearing Tuesday night, that's when we tape this show, U.S. District Court Judge Tim Kelly ruled that he will not issue an emergency order blocking the appointment of Mick Mulvaney to run the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This was the fight after Richard Cordray left to run for governor of Ohio.
I think that's what I read.
And named a successor, which under Dodd-Frank was the proper mechanism. Trump is in an effort to crush the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The only silver lining from Trump's desire to crush the bureau, other than obviously it protects consumers, so he's not into it because there's an opportunity for banks to make a little bit more money. And is that Mick Mulvaney will, so he'll undermine that. What's it like, Brett?
It's like putting Cruella DeVille in charge of PETA.
That's right. Thank you, Brett Ehrlich, ladies and gentlemen.
If you want those, or the Dalmatian lobby.
You went past the punchline, man.
That's right.
You went past the punchline.
Sorry.
I don't think we
National
should
Kennel Club.
I don't want to see that taken out in editing either because I want to teach you a lesson. But Mick Mulvaney will completely undermine everything the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau does. I mean, everyone should, again, understand that he's there to destroy that agency. The only silver lining is that it's important to the administration to undermine Elizabeth Warren an indication that Elizabeth Warren has some power and that she is very much on their radar. I heard earlier today, before Judge Kelly issued that order or refused to issue that order, that either way, this decision was going to be appealed. So in the meantime, though, I imagine that there's not an order and Mick Mulvaney will, he'll be there first thing in the morning Wednesday.
I've never wanted to work someplace more than I want to work at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau right now, having two bosses.
Oh, right, yeah.
Believe in utterly different approaches to the company.
Right.
Like, they were like, you know, Mulvaney brought donuts is literally what happened. He gave everybody donuts. And then English was like, oh, thank you all for working with me. And it's just awkward.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
awful.
Mulvaney's like, hey, congratulations to employee of the month, Ambria Allen. You get the great parking space. And then the woman that Cordray named was like, oh, great. Congratulations to our employee of the month, Brett Ehrlich. And then both you guys are like running to your cars trying to get there first.
It's like The Office when Michael and Jim, right?
Yes.
Jim was day to day and Michael was big picture. And it was like,
you know, it always works. That's why we have two presidents, I believe,
right,
is the line. You know?
So more news today out of North Korea. North Korea fired a ballistic missile today, Wednesday morning. That's what time it is in Korea. It's actually Wednesday of next week, too. They don't tell you that.
It's actually, yeah.
It was the first time they fired a missile in better than 2 months. Oddly enough, defying demands from President Trump that they halt their weapons program. And it obviously significantly raises the stakes in the what could become, in worst case scenario, a nuclear-fueled battle on the Korean Peninsula. This is the news today, which means that this, from when President Trump addressed the United Nations, was it last month?
I think so. It was a while. I don't remember. They all blur together.
Earlier,
oh, the UN.
When President Trump before addressed the United Nations, video six.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary.
So here are the details on what happened today from the New York Times. Graphic 19, North Korea fired an intercontinental ballistic missile early Wednesday for the first time in 4 months. The missile took off around Pyongyang at 3:17 in the morning, flew east for about 53 minutes. Before landing off the north of Honshu, that's Japan's largest island, nearly 600 miles from the launch site. So again, the indications would be that, as you might imagine, that North Korea just sort of plows ahead and does what it wants, regardless of what any U.S. administration has said. The Trump people will try to blame this on Obama and the Obama administration and the foreign policy team there, that they left this mess. But the reality is that things have gone best for North Korea when we have engaged with them most. We are engaging now with them least. But this is a problem that has existed for American presidents since the end of the Korean police action.
Right.
In
it is. Yeah. This the way the time works is it was 3 o'clock in the morning in 1958
right.
is when they shot. Except they have nukes now.
Right. That's right.
That's the difference. Yeah. It's weird because they took 2 months off. Between the era when two months ago when they were essentially shooting off a rocket every few weeks, or if not more often, and folks are wondering why the hell is that happening.
Well, let's take a look real quick at graphic 21 here. North Korea has now test fired 15 missiles so far in 2017, conducted its sixth underground nuclear test in September. So this has been a particularly busy year for North Korea testing weapons.
They took time off. What was the reason for that? Some could, you know, there's one approach that could say, well, they weren't ready with this missile yet. It was delayed, and so they couldn't launch something that wasn't ready. Maybe there was some kind of problem they had technologically, or in the meantime, things that have happened are President Trump went to Asia to try to rally support. There was an envoy sent from China to North Korea. Maybe they wanted to see just exactly how hot China wanted to exert pressure or not, or what kinds of things they wanted to say in their meeting in between then. Mm-hmm. And then also there was the raising, you know, the levying of sanctions from the UN Security Council and increased sanctions and putting North Korea back on the list of state sponsors of terror, and maybe they had some kind of administrative issues that they needed to see toward to kind of handle the repercussions of that change in policy.
North Korea, all that is entirely possible. So is North Korea was waiting for the return of Dennis Rodman,
yeah,
who was posing, of course, as a nuclear scientist and breaking into Los Alamos to get the final details that Kim Jong-un needs.
Teach us how to rebound from this crisis.
What strikes me as most likely is that Pyongyang, which I know how to pronounce well because I watched MASH.
Good for you.
Is that they're operating on their own timetable, and it really doesn't matter what happens around them. I mean, if there is a compelling reason to scale back, if they're engaged, then maybe they will. We haven't seen that before, and I'm not suggesting that a different administration would have North Korea engaged in a more meaningful way. But they're headed for their 70th anniversary, and I think that they want to say on their 70th anniversary, our nuclear program is complete.
Yeah.
We have it. We're ready. Mm-hmm. We're 70, and we're betting 70 is the new 50, and we're ready to bomb.
And they're going to do it in the kind of like commercial propaganda that mimics like a Cialis commercial. Like, you're getting up there in age, make sure your heart is healthy enough for nuclear activity.
Both of you.
But like, that's the kind of weird prop. We're going to see a weird propaganda video that will kind of offset terrifying it is that they're doing this.
You think Kim Jong-un's going to have a weird propaganda video?
That's what I can't wait for.
It'll be very mainstream.
Yeah.
International crisis, guys.
But of course they're trying. Of course they're trying to establish some kind of nuclear program. They want to have it done. And things that have happened that you can point to Trump for doing is, saying that the nuclear deal is bad. And it's not just him. This has happened. No one solved the North Korea problem. If you say that one side was better at it, like the person who took North Korea, as far as I remember, off the lists of state sponsors of terror was George W. Bush. Happened. And no one has solved it. Trump has undercut. You want to send a message that, like, if you back off your nuclear program, things are going to go a lot better for you. But if you look at what's happened in Iran, they agreed to a nuclear deal, and Trump has done nothing but try to undercut that. Libya, give up your nuclear weapons program. All right, we're going to eventually someone's going to drag Qaddafi through a ditch. Like, it hasn't. That promise hasn't been delivered on, and it's a lot of people's faults or decisions or what have you. But it seems like if you're North Korea and your priority is to stay in power, you don't see a clear path towards staying in power that involves giving up your nuclear arsenal and plans.
North Korea has persisted in its nuclear, reading from the New York Times, North Korea has persisted in its nuclear weapons and missile development despite 9 rounds of sanctions that the Security Council has imposed. That's since 2006, since its first test. Country's also made strides in its ballistic missile program since Kim Jong-un took power in late 2011, tested 2 intercontinental ballistic missiles in July, the last of which demonstrated the potential of reaching the mainland of the United States. Now Washington is applying what it calls, quote, maximum pressure and sanctions to stop North Korea from reaching the stage where it would be able to deliver a nuclear warhead on its ICBMs. But Kim Jong-un says his country will conduct more missile tests in the Pacific Ocean to hone its capabilities. And again, I would imagine, I read this and it just made sense. It's not like I came up with it on my own, that they want to be ready by the time they turn 70. And that's what they're going for. And it's not about like which administration we get to blame. There was a time in this country that sort of issues like this, really there was no significant partisan divide on, because there were, at the bare minimum in the State Department, hundreds, thousands of competent professionals who worked on issues like this. That is not the case anymore.
Sure.
One of the things that I think that it's worth all of us as Americans to focus on is that while Rex Tillerson is not Mike Flynn, he's not David Clark, he's not Sarah Huckabee Sanders, he's not Mike Huckabee, he's not any of the Trump kids, right? He's not Steve Bannon or Roger Stone, he is not a raving lunatic, right? Who should have no, Alex Jones, who should have no, Sean Hannity, who should not have no influence whatsoever in the government. He will go down as the worst Secretary of State in American history, modern American history, because we had some with some other issues. He has no business at this job. He's not interested in this job. The mere fact that we want to like him now because he hates Trump and Trump hates him is a point in his favor, but it is literally the only point in his favor.
Sure.
And the notion that this administration selected as the guy to lead the State Department in these incredibly troubling times, which they kept talking about, these troubling times that the Obama administration left us in, that they would hire an oil executive to head the Department of State is an outrage that we have let slip off the table of outrages, because I got it, we've had 1,000 more. But he has no business in the job. The stories are that he does not want the job,
right,
and we are seeing professionals leave the State Department
in
droves. And there is going to be an impact for that, in that eventually we will run out, we may have already reached that point, of the North Korea experts. Partially, I don't blame him for leaving, because they're like, hey, nobody's listening to me. I've been working on North Korea. I knew his father. I knew his grandfather. I've been working. My life is understanding what North Korea's done. We know they're not being invited to the table. And we know that a couple weeks ago, Rex Tillerson devoted tons of State Department resources to finding Hillary Clinton emails.
Right.
So
for
the love of God, stop touting Rex Tillerson as an answer to anything. He isn't. And it is as bad a move as Trump has made in the fractious, dangerous world that we live in, that he appointed an oil executive from Exxon to run the Department of State.
Yeah, his core competency in a situation like this would be finding a way to go somewhere between the State Department and North Korea, if he was still running Exxon, to find a way to, like, you know, get the oil rights in the demilitarized zone. Like, that's his core competency. It's a way to find how to exploit resources given constraints. When it comes to, like, dealing with this on behalf of anything more than his business interests, like, I don't blame the guy, but that's not what he's good at.
Yeah, what counts as winning for ExxonMobil is not the same as winning for us. We may have to pay an enormous price, I mean, financially, right? Or losing face also. But if the result of it is some degree of stability in the Korean Peninsula and protecting the millions of South Koreans who we have taken on, appropriately so, as our duty to protect, then that's what a diplomat does. He never was a diplomat. He never showed any interest in it. It's not really his fault, except it is his fault for taking the job. All right, that's your North Korea update. Do we take a break now, or do we just keep chugging along?
Do you want to chug along? I got a piece of paper.
Let's just chug.
Let's chug. Who cares? All right, I'm going to introduce this story now. You guys are screwed.
Thank God.
You done? How did that feel?
Great.
You did great work. He's fantastic. And now for something completely different. Okay, It's Friday, right? Okay. Dozens of police departments are seeking expanded powers to check people's immigration status. This is very important. There's a program called 287G that essentially allows local police departments to get their police officers deputized to perform certain functions that typically are in charge, or what ICE is in charge of, customs and immigration. And so they have offered this program to certain police departments. 29 have signed up, 38 more are interested in signing up. What kind of people are signing up? So according to Reuters analysis, the police departments that joined or expressed interest in joining oversee small populations, typically fewer than 100,000 residents with small immigrant populations. Police departments in places like New York and Los Angeles, which have larger populations, have thus far limited federal cooperation and promised to defy Trump's executive orders to increase the number of detentions and deportations of immigrant populations. So essentially, you sign up for this program, you get deputized to kind of essentially promise to check the background of any person that you suspect of being an undocumented immigrant. But there's another incentive built into this program that would kind of incentivize these local police departments to sign up for it. The town stands to make money if it signs a separate contract with ICE to house immigrant detainees, a payment that comes per detainee per day. As of April 27, about one-third of the 98 jurisdictions that have existing agreements or have expressed interest in them house people on behalf of ICE, according to Reuters. So what do you guys have a problem with that? This is essentially the
Yes, of course. Of course, any sane person, first of all,
it was a good conversation starter, question wise.
It was south. It was totally wise. South.
Wise.
I say this every time a story comes up with ICE. You can't have a law enforcement agency designed solely to have a cool name. I guarantee you they worked backwards from ICE.
Yeah.
I guarantee it. Like, we want to be called ICE. How do we make that fit? Like, what could that be? Right? Immigration, Customs Enforcement. Yes, yes. Again, because you feel like a badass. You're not supposed to feel like a badass.
Right.
You're supposed to feel like you're in law enforcement. Right? And then you're supposed to enforce the law. So I don't like a cool name for law enforcement. I think
what about SWAT team, though?
SWAT only became cool in retrospect, like when they came up with SWAT. It didn't sound cool until the show started.
Bull S.
Huh?
Bull S.
Oh, you think so?
I think so. You came up with SWAT because you wanted it to be like the SWAT team.
Yeah, I got you.
I don't know.
It's not as badass instinctively as ICE. Okay, but let's leave that part out. So you're now going to financially incentivize law enforcement to detain people. It's pretty easy for any crime. Pretty easy to see why you'd pull over a dark-looking person for jaywalking, for slow rolling through a stop sign when nobody else was around, the kind of stuff that people happens every day. The cops look the other way on every day. But here's an opportunity. Oh, look, I'll run them in. I now have this enhanced federal power to check their immigration status and detain them and then deport them or start a deportation process. And I'm going to get financially rewarded for that. That's criminal. That's horrible. I also hope that there is that many on the right are suitably outraged at this overreach of federal authority given to the states. I'm sure they're not. But if they're true to what they believe in, then they would be.
Yeah. This has been shut down already in certain jurisdictions, to give you an idea of what has happened as a result of giving people an incentive to check people's immigration background. They have shut these down largely on racial grounds. According to the US Department of Justice, they shut down the program in Arizona's Maricopa County. There's a familiar name.
Sheriff Joe.
In 2011, after it found that the department engaged in discriminatory policing practices, which abused the rights of Latinos, essentially telling them, like, listen, you guys, you have to sign this, so we have to send you back, as opposed to not signing it and allowing the process to go forward where it could be looked into that they might have a right to be released.
The guy's given one pardon, right, Trump?
Yeah, I don't know if it's one, but the one that I've heard about is Joe. And then another one is the Department of Justice also terminated the program in Almonts County. I don't know if I'm saying that right. North Carolina, after finding the police department, quote, routinely discriminates against and targets Latinos. The Almonts County Sheriff's Office, where the sheriff once ordered his deputies to, quote, bring me some Mexicans, is once again seeking to rejoin the federal program as of November, according to the Weekly.
So they want back in. Boy, you know, if that's quote just changes slightly, instead of bring me some Mexicans, to bring me some Mexican food.
Right.
Then, like, I'll go to Almonts County and I'll eat Mexican food with the sheriff. That sounds fantastic, right? But no, instead, what it is clear is that there's no getting around it. Anyone who says the phrase in a law enforcement position, bring me some Mexicans, that's racist. There's no. Am I wrong? Is there a soft interpretation of that? Am I being too harsh?
Oh no, I don't think that's up for debate. I mean, I think mass incarceration is an industry, right? Like, this is obviously going to bolster private prisons, which is something that Jeff Sessions wanted, like in the first couple months, outright, kind of ending programs that were ending the expansion of private prisons. This is going to bolster that. And I think you're going to get racial profiling anytime it's happening. The enrollment is proliferating in these places where the demographic of immigrants is not high, right? So places like Los Angeles and New York, all of this stuff is getting shut down. But it's in these small spaces, these cities, towns, where people are racist. Right?
Well,
like, this is.
It just also feels like they've been painted in this picture of their town as this thing that's getting overrun by illegal immigrants. Statistics would say no. I mean, rural areas and undocumented immigrants, like, I I mean, I guess maybe, but
I'm sure there are places in the country where it's a problem. But overall, the percentage of time that we spend talking about this issue, it is massively overshadows the actual level of problem that this is. I am sure, I don't mean to minimize, there are towns where people actually have lost jobs to undocumented immigrants. I'm sure it's happened somewhere. It is not a crisis in the United States of America in any way. And it's obvious. What you think cops anywhere are going to be like, Brett and I are crossing the street and we jaywalk, and they're going to be like, check, see if those fellows are from Quebec.
We're gonna
run them back to the Great White North. It's never gonna happen. We know how this is gonna go down. We know exactly how this is gonna go down, as evidenced by what already has happened in Maricopa County and Almance County in North Carolina.
Yep. All right, we've got to take a break. Please hit us up on our Twitter feeds at #TYTLive, and we'll read some of those. Also, more to talk about after the break. Don't go away.